welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted Brewer Show with your hosts, Ted and Austin Brewer, bringing you the latest world news and health research. This is Ted Brewer, and we're so glad you're with us today. And we've got a special guest today. Doug Hagman will be joining us for the entire hour, talking about his new book and also going into detail about the world events that are happening. We particularly want to talk to him about what's going on with CERN, what's going on with Hillary Clinton, what's going on with the election politics, what happened last night in Wisconsin. All of these things we want to have Doug give us his synopsis on. And so let's get started, Doug. What do you want to start with this?
Well, anywhere, I guess. You know, it's interesting. If I could just lay the groundwork here for the show today, and I believe what we're seeing, to me at least, is a situation when a nation forgets God. You know, we're talking about, and I don't want to be sound like a preacher because I'm not, or a pastor or minister, I'm not. I'm just a Christian out here looking over the landscape, and what I'm seeing is a lot of political rhetoric and people really buying into this political rhetoric and this hope that there's a political solution to the spiritual morass that we face. So, you know, it's interesting. Everyone talks about restoring America, bringing America back, making America great again. And I kind of have this feeling in the back of my mind and in my gut, this is a kind of hubris that got us into the trouble that we're in right now. And you know, so there are two aspects to this. You know, when the people of a country forget God, and then believing, when the people believe that God is on their side, I think that's kind of where we're at right now. So having said that, I just want people to keep that in mind as they listen to your program today, which, I'm so honored to be on. But, you know, I'm seeing a lot of parallels today, and I know you are too, and I know you talk about this. And, but by the way, if I can just plug this, if you didn't hear Ted's appearance on the Common Sense Show, folks, on Sunday, oh my goodness, you talk about a wonderful, wonderful, explosive and incredible amount of information. You got to listen to that, because Ted was on fire, and he was on for it for the first 2 hours, Ted, I believe, right, on the Common Sense Show.
Oh, that's right, Doug. And we went into the spiritual aspects of 9/11 as a mass ritual sacrifice.
Yeah.
And the numerology and the cabology that was being used, and the astrology that was being used, as far as the dates, the placements of the people that were being killed, the devices that were being used, what happened with the two buildings, the number 11, the number 93. We went into just a massive amount of detail on this and what they did. Because remember, these numerologists, cabalists, these guys are obsessed with numbers. They're obsessed with astrology. They're obsessed with doing everything on their time charts and their astrological charts. And that's how they can maximize the amount of energy that they're able to dedicate back to Lucifer. And it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. In fact, Doug, you remember, there's a picture that came out when they were just showing on the video one time, this giant smoke cloud looked like a giant demon head over the trade towers, and that thing made national news. Now, whether that was Photoshop, I don't know. They said it was not. I don't know. But it wouldn't have surprised me, considering all the stuff they were doing and all the human beings that were being burned alive and killed in there. And then the fact that they put them into that landfill, the fresh kill landfill out there in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't even make this stuff up. It's so crazy. And so it's nuts. But thank you, Doug. Oh, by the way, guys, Doug has a new book out. The name of the book is Stained by Blood. It is a phenomenal murder mystery that it was actually a true story that he actually stumbled onto back in the 90s. Was it 90s or the 80s, Doug?
Well, yeah, if I can speak on this a moment here. My book, Stained by Blood, which is available now on Amazon, or I've got some copies here at the office, a few that people can go to stainedbyblood.com and they can order if they want. I'll sign them for them. And the instructions are at stainedbyblood.com. But having said all that, here's the 60-second version of what was going on. I became a private investigator back in 1987. Prior to that, I was in the EMS field. I was a paramedic and a firefighter as well on rescue squad. April 28th, 1982, was a Wednesday morning. I got a call from my father. He said, you got to come here real quick. Something happened to your uncle, who was living with my father at the time. My mother had died a couple of years before, and my dad took in his younger brother, who had never married. Well, April 28th, 1982, I arrived at my former home and was directed to the bedroom where I grew up. and had so many good memories of my childhood, and found the most hideous, brutal murder scene, gruesome, frenzied killing you've ever witnessed or ever seen. And this after five plus years of me being in the EMS field, seeing decapitations and such, but from car accidents and from anything, you know, murders and accidents, what have you. But having said that, I walked into the bedroom and I saw my uncle. He was stabbed 38 times. It was just gruesome to the max. The thing that caught me, and I'm not going to give too much away, but I had walked by, there was enough forensic evidence, I'll just say this, left at the scene for this to be a solvable crime within 48 hours. Now, back in 82, of course, people have got to remember there was not DNA as it is today. There was APHIS, which, for fingerprints, but it was a manual type system. And the police at the time, who interviewed me and my father and others, said, "Look, we should have this thing wrapped up in 48 hours." It remained unsolved for 5 years. Fast forward to April 28th, 1987. I was a PI at the time, cutting my teeth on surveillance and routine investigations. My family hired our company, my partner and I, to investigate this case. Well. Now here's what I should, a couple of disclaimers. The book is written by me. This is a true story. However, based on the sensitivity of the matter, and because some people are still alive, I had to change my name and the names of the people involved. So it reads as a novel, but the information is true. So I'm Mark Stiles in the book as a PI. And we accept this case 5 years to the day later. And we begin on the book begins on the fifth anniversary of the murder. And we walk you through real quick of what we run into. What I thought was a murder, just a murder that we were going to investigate, all of a sudden we're bumping into things like stuff that Steve Quayle and Russ Dizdar talk about. Stuff like satanic ritual abuse, child abductions, sacrifices. I mean, pedophilia, this Franklin scandal kind of stuff. And I, at the time, I didn't know what this was all about. So, what I do is I take basically the reader on the investigation with me. We go to another state. We find a larger network of occult satanic practices, and we're given the choice to leave the state or be killed, basically. And then the murder is solved in a rather unlikely manner. An arrest is made, and the killer is caught. But I got to tell you, it came at a price, because we did identify a network of mind control handlers, of victims, of satanic ritual abuse players and perpetrators, of child abductors, ritualistic killings. And again, not knowing what we had back then, now, had I known then what I know now, I would have recognized, number one, the danger, number two, the what was going on. Fast forward to today now. Now I can see, looking back, and I can see, okay, this is going on today, except even at a greater pace and a greater and in more depth. And this is a driving factor, whether people want to believe this or not, this is a driving factor behind, well, your political leaders, or many of your political leaders, I shouldn't say all of them, the people in powerful positions, people with money. And every day I read a news story about how things are being uncovered now, that, hey, these people are involved in satanic abuse or satanic ritualistic activities and killings and perverted sexual things. So this is what we're seeing on a larger level today. And that kind of, that's why I wrote the book. It was a cathartic experience for me. And I wanted to introduce this. This should serve as an introduction to people who don't believe in what we're talking about. So hope, and thanks for allowing me to do that, say that. It's available on Amazon, by the way, and, as well. So, Stained by
Blood. It's Doug Hagman's Stained by Blood, and he also has available hard copies at his office if you want to contact him there. How would they do that, Doug?
Yeah, just go to stainedbyblood.com, look on the upper right there, and if you want to buy from me, again, I've got a limited number of quantities or quantity here at the office. I'll sign it to you and get it right out to you within a couple of days.
These will be signed copies from you, then. That'd
sure.
be great. Okay, well, guys, that's why I wanted to promote that today on the show, because, you know, Doug's been so kind, and all the books that I've come out with, Doug's always promoted all of those, so we wanted you to understand that this is a must-read book. It's like a primer for people who don't know this stuff really goes on. It's real. We've talked about it repeatedly on our show. We've talked about the importance of understanding who these people are and what they are and the ritual abuses they're involved in and the mind control they're involved in. And so Doug takes you through like a primer for people that are, should say, just being exposed to this information for the first time. So I know, I read this the other day, that Hillary Clinton has had multiple abortions in her life. And I also know, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I've read that. Because I mean, the only way I would know that is to have been in the place where the abortion took place. But I do know this, and that we've seen this many, many, many times. There's been much evidence to report that a lot of the top performers in Hollywood, along with music artists, they have children just to sacrifice, and that's one of the requirements to get high up in the music industry or in the media industry or in TV or movie industry, that they're required in many cases to sacrifice one of their family members, or in some cases to become pregnant and sacrifice that child. Have you heard that, Doug?
Absolutely, I've heard that. And I refused initially to believe it. You're speaking about Hillary Clinton, however, and in March of 2009, 6 years ago now, or what? No, 7 years ago. I can't do math, apparently. What would it be?
7 years.
7 years ago, thank you. It doesn't matter. Hillary Clinton, she received the Planned Parenthood Margaret Sanger Award, and Clinton, at that point, at that moment in time, when she got that award, she said, you know, I admire Margaret Sanger enormously. Her courage, her tenacity, her vision. And I'm quoting right from her speech, by the way, Hillary Clinton. And when I think about what she did all of those years ago in Brooklyn, taking on archetypes, taking on attitudes and accusations flowing from all directions, I'm really in awe of her. And Margaret Sanger, by the way, said the following, and this is a direct quote from Margaret Sanger. And people can look this up if they don't believe me. She said, I accepted an invitation to talk to the women's branch of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. I saw through the door dim figures parading with banners and illuminated crosses. I was escorted to the platform and introduced and began to speak. In the end, through simple illustrations, I believe I accomplished my purpose. A dozen invitations to speak to similar groups were proffered. This is from her Margaret Sanger, an autobiography, page 366, I am quoting from. The reason I bring this up is because this is really, these were ritualistic killings that focused on genocide, especially genocide of the infirmed and the blacks at the time. And Sanger believed that all blacks were in an inferior race. And anyone who had an IQ below a certain number, I don't recall what that number was, that they needed to be aborted. Anyone in the infirmed category, whether if you had an impairment, aborted. But they also intertwined this this occultish type practice within the Planned Parenthood back then venue. Now, I read just on Skywatch TV 2 days ago where they were citing from, I believe it was lifenews.com, where the Planned Parenthood facilities, at least one of them, where this author had toured, had a sign that referenced some sort of, implied some sort of sacred ritualistic kind of atmosphere. Now, I don't recall what the sign said, but certainly that was the takeaway from it. So people have to realize that, 60, 70 million aborted unborn children is really a Holocaust, and that's what we're deep into. And of course, the proponents of that Holocaust include, but are not limited to, Clinton, who he or she herself, I believe, as you mentioned, I've seen the reports. I don't know, but I do believe that she has had a number of abortions. Talking about this, it just is so incredible, Ted, to talk about this, and Austin, to talk about this, man. It's just really,
it's awful. I mean, but that's why I wanted to address this today, because it's just awful. And there's really nothing positive about Hillary Clinton. In fact, Hillary Clinton, this is according to Breitbart, Tuesday on ABC's The View, she was on there again with all those other loony girls. Democrat presidential candidate Hillary Clinton reiterated her claim from over the weekend that a child on its due date just before delivery still has no constitutional rights. Co-host Paul Ferris asked, I want to ask you about some comments that you made over the weekend on Meet the Press, and you said, quote, the unborn person doesn't have constitutional rights. My question is, at what point does someone have constitutional rights? And are you saying that a child on its due date, just hours or minutes or seconds before delivery, has no constitutional rights? Clinton said, under our law, that is the case. Paula, I support Roe v. Wade because I think it's an important statement about the importance of a woman making this most difficult decision with consultation by whom she chooses, her doctor, her faith, there you go, her Lucifer, Satanism, her family, and under the law, and under certainly that decision, that is the way we structure it. I mean, are you joking me? I mean, but that's, to me, this baby is completely and totally viable at 9 months, and she's saying that it does not have any constitutional rights. In other words, if you shoot the mother, and both mother and child die, you will only be held accountable for one homicide, is what she's saying. Now, whether that's true or not, or whether a court of law saw it that way, I don't know. I know it's kind of odd to me that she actually believes that strongly in this, Doug. And I just, Austin, this particularly affects you because your baby is due like on Monday. And I mean, little hunters and they're kicking and moving around all the time and wanting to get out and ready to get born and ready to see some daylight. And you know, and you're saying, well, he has no rights. He's not a living person. I mean, it's a joke. Anybody who's had a pregnant wife or felt the stomach of a pregnant woman and feel that little baby kicking in there knows that baby's alive and viable. It's very, very frustrating and very sad to me that we have a country that's accepted this massive satanic genocide is what it is, this aborted Holocaust of 60, 70 million infants now, and we think that that's okay because all it is a giant form of Baal worship. But as far as I'm concerned, I will not bow my knee to Baal, and I will not be involved in any of this stuff, Doug, and I know you feel the same way. But what do you think about Hillary's comments about this?
Well, first of all, congratulations, Austin. If I haven't said that to you before, I want to make sure. God bless you. That's one of the greatest gifts a man could ever experience, and that's the you know, being part of that birthing process. And congratulations, buddy. But
thank you, bud. I appreciate it. We're definitely pretty excited.
Oh man, you should be. And now the trouble starts. Okay,
the fun starts,
right? But and Ted, you know, anyone who's raised teenagers knows.
Oh,
you know, oh boy. But anyway, I went back to the original interview with Clinton with Chuck Todd, and Chuck Todd asked a 10-word question. Todd asked this: when or if does an unborn child have constitutional rights? And she replied, and I'm quoting now, well, under our laws currently, this is not something that exists. The unborn person does not have constitutional rights. And then there was some monologue in there, and then she breaks away from that and states further, but it does not include sacrificing the woman's right to make decisions. And I think that's an important distinction that under Roe v. Wade that we've had enshrined under our Constitution. Well, that entire paragraph is a lie. It's a lie straight from the pit of hell. And every viable candidate in this race for president, including and especially those who call themselves conservatives, should be ashamed of themselves for not calling out and not taking a stand on this particular issue. Because, and from this, we can see that the conservative Republican platform has been fully captured. We can see the gutless, shameless, shameful obfuscation of what is taking place here in this country. And again, the lies coming from our elected politicians are straight from the pit of hell that somehow, and especially with regard to an unborn child, is a woman's rights issue. It never was, never is, never will be. The leading cause of death in America is infanticide. It's not cancer. It's not auto accidents. It's infanticide. And if you search the 40,000 pages of the congressional record, something that author John Coleman had done back in the early 70s and mid-70s, you can see that there is no power for abortion found in the U.S. Constitution, none whatsoever. Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court found a power in the U.S. Constitution that does not exist. And I think, Ted, you and I spoke about this, back in the 1800s, to become a lawmaker, a senator, or part of the House, you had to study the Constitution. It was unwritten law. You had to study the Constitution for at least 2 years before you could be considered a viable candidate. The people we have in power today don't know a rat's behind about the Constitution. And the leaders of conservatism and defenders of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they have been bowing to the pressure of the minority, I suppose. And we've been compromised in such a way that it's unrecognizable. And this is not a woman's right issue. And I won't belabor the point, but, you know, The Supreme Court, judicial supremacy, and Ted, I know you know this, and I know we've spoken on this before. judicial supremacy is a myth. Three branches of government, the weakest of which is the judicial branch. They don't make laws. They render opinions. Those opinions are non-binding. If they were binding, then I'll tell you what, every block in America better be concerned, because they're only two-thirds of a person today. Because if we were to bow to the Supreme Court's decision on abortion and homosexual marriage, then if we're to say that that's the law of the land, then so is the Dred Scott decision, because that's never been overturned. And that puts blacks at two-thirds of a person. So we can't have it both ways. Yet the lawmakers want it both ways, and the people are too uninformed not to take a stand and say, wait a minute, you can't do this. You cannot force this on the American people. The two greatest threats to the maintenance and stability of our form of government and our rights guaranteed by the Bill of Rights are gun control and abortion. And the Supreme Court justices who voted for abortion acted outside of the pale and canon of the Constitution when they said that the Fourth Amendment right to privacy, that right could be interpreted as rights of a woman to abort her unborn child. That is absolute constitutional heresy, and people need to understand this. Boy, I'm fired up.
Man, I can tell. Now, I found this article that you were talking about as far as the inside of that abortion clinic. Let me read part of it. This is an article by Judy Brown. It's called The Occult World of Abortion. I'm quoting her now. In the occult or secret world of abortion, nothing is as it appears. In a Life Site News article, we read an interview of a woman whose mother worked in an abortion clinic and who has firsthand knowledge of the clinic's inner workings. According to this insider, the clinic was pervaded with occult imagery and practices. The article continued by stating that the workers considered abortion to be a form of sacrifice and would perform the procedure as sort of ritual and worship deities embodying death. Furthermore, this woman, who converted to Catholicism years after the experience, said, "I always had a feeling there was something wrong or dangerous there, almost a feeling of a presence which I now recognize as being the exact opposite of the presence that I feel in church. The workers in the clinic worshipped a goddess whose truest form was recognized as the great dragon." Frightening words indeed. Further proof of what goes on behind the doors of abortion clinics is both disturbing and sinister, and involve activities in work its workers do not want us to know about. And listen to this one. "Perhaps this is why the propaganda surrounding the act of abortion remains such a powerful tool in the hands of those who persuade the ill-informed into accepting it as a fact that nothing is wrong with abortion, but everything is wrong with those who oppose it. Take, for example, the case of David Elion, the founder of the Center for Medical Practicals and chief investigator of the macabre world of Planned Parenthood's sale of aborted baby parts. Commentator Tamara Tabo, who claims that she is strongly opposed to abortion and critical of Planned Parenthood, assails Dalion's character and his work, saying that Dalion may be an investigator, but he's probably no journalist. Let's not pretend that he routinely follows journalistic standards or ethics of professional contact." I mean, are you kidding me? He shows what they're doing, but now she wants to attack him personally. But then it goes on, and it says, "Consider this example as well. Inside the walls of the Summit Women's Center, an abortion clinic in Connecticut, a sign on the waiting room wall reads, 'The staff in this office does sacred work, and though you may hope to never come back, we return each day to hear your stories, hold your hands, and ease your fears.'" I mean, they're saying the concern is that it's sacred work. Are you joking me, Doug? But that's what these nutbags really believe. They really believe that killing this child is a form of sacrifice to this great dragon, to Lucifer in many cases. I'm not saying they all are like this, but in many cases. And the sad part about all of this is the population in our country has been so dumbed down that nobody wants to believe this. Doug, what do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you hit it right on the head there. And thanks for grabbing that article. I didn't have it in front of me. But, yeah, I mean, you're looking at really the intersection, and I deliberately use that term, the intersection of the occult and magic with a K, with the practice, the abhorrent practice, and highly illegal and unconstitutional, or highly legal and unconstitutional practice of abortion. But you see, through what you talk about all the time, and people really need to understand, what you talk about with respect to our ability to process information when we, if we're hobbled by mineral and vitamin deficiencies, when we're just full of poison and toxin, we can't focus because of our physical state. You talk about this bringing us to a point where we can finally, once again, see clearly through our physical health and state. And that's so important because we're being poisoned every day through the food and GMOs and all of this. And you point this out. And I think that we need to look at this, at least in my view, as a whole picture, like a holistic picture. Holistic meaning the bigger picture, where we all have to understand, yeah, we're being dumbed down. It's not just through education and dumbing down the education standards and Common Core in this, but it's also through the foods we eat and ingest and our deficiencies in our bodies. So when you, as a doctor, Dr. Brower, come out and put both or all pieces of this puzzle together, we can now see the agenda, the tactics, the playing field, and what we need to do about it. So that's why I'm so thankful to you, because I've never felt more on top of my game than I do right now. And it's a process, and it's all part of a bigger picture. So thank you for that. But people really need to understand. And I probably went down a few rabbit trails there I shouldn't have gone.
Well, Doug, thank you. In fact, what Doug and I have been friends for years. But what happened about a year ago, he contacted me and told me his blood sugar was just completely sky high. It was like either 400 or 500. I don't remember. And he was almost having me hospitalized. And I told him, I said, well, Doug, there's some things you've got to do from a lifestyle standpoint that you've got to change. I mean, you've got to cut out a bunch of stuff, and you got to start doing a bunch of stuff if you want to control this blood sugar, because the metformin that you're on has been linked to pancreatic cancer. And so he worked with his medical doctor up there and titrating his dosing back down and changing what he was doing as far as medications. And we put him on a full-blown supplement program to help stabilize blood sugar. So he had healthy, it's called the Healthy Blood Sugar Protocol. And then Doug was able to bring his blood sugar down to normal within just a few months. And he's been able to keep it that way as long as he stays on the protocol. And again, that protocol now has a name to it. It's called the Hagman Blood Sugar Protocol on the front part of my website at healthmasters.com, which is bringing you the show today. So that's Doug's testimonial on that. Yeah. Then we told him we had to get him off the coffee. So then we put him on Purple Sticks instead of coffee. And he loves those. Like anybody who uses Purple Sticks loves them. I mean, I use them. I use them yesterday and the day before, twice. I usually don't do that. I usually only take one a day. But that's why I was so geeked up yesterday and on Monday. And so today, I'm a lot more subdued, because I knew that Doug was here today and I wasn't having to be geeked up about anything. But Doug, I want to totally change topics here. Sure. I want to give you a comment that Obama just made. And Austin, I want your comment on this too, because this absolutely blows my mind. Let me read this paragraph from the Daily Caller. The Obama administration released a warning Monday telling the nation's landlords that it may be discriminatory for them to refuse to rent to those with criminal records like felons. The Fair Housing Act doesn't include criminals as a protected class, but the Department of Housing and Urban Development says refusing to rent based on a criminal record is a form of racial discrimination. There we go. Due to racial imbalances in the U.S. justice system. There we go. The Fair Housing Act prohibits both intentional housing of discrimination and housing practices that have an unjustified discriminatory effect because of race, national origin, or other protected characteristics, says HUD's newly released guidelines. Because of widespread racial and ethnic disparities in the U.S. criminal justice system, criminal history-based restrictions on access to housing are likely disproportionately to burden African Americans and Hispanics. While the Act does not prohibit housing providers from approximately considering criminal history information when making housing decisions, arbitrary and overbroad criminal history-related bans are likely to lack a legally sufficient justification. Doug, are they telling us now that they're headed to the point that it doesn't matter what a person has done, how many people they've killed, how many people they've raped, how many children they've sodomized, that if they decide that they're black or they're Hispanics, that we can't not rent to them? Is that where this is going? Is this part of Obama's continual onslaught against racial normality and racial everybody getting along with each other? What's up with this, Doug?
Well, there's two parts to this, and I heard this, and I remember studying this a long time ago. Here's the deal. Number one, there's the objective here, which is the objective is to break down all barriers and essentially make, in this case, those people here illegally, make it illegal for landlords or property owners to ask for identification or do a background check, whether it be a credit report or a criminal background check on any potential tenant. That's what the intent is. So if you're in this country illegally, and notice the use of racism or racist in that statement, it is directed toward nationality, and it's directed toward race. And this is an acknowledgement of the, honestly, this is an acknowledgement of the problem of crime with blacks and illegal immigrants in this country. Now, people are going to send you emails saying, oh, man, Doug stepped in it, and, you know, he's a racist. No, no. I had Colin Flaherty on, who wrote White Girl Bleed a lot, giving me crime statistics. The bottom line is there is this super secret number that's being withheld from the American public that discloses that blacks are responsible for a disproportionate amount of crime in this country. And even worse than that, the illegal immigrants that are in this country are responsible for a disproportionate amount of crime. But this goes back very quickly, a little history about this. This goes back to the National Housing Act of 1934, which established the Federal Housing Administration, the FHA. This goes back to the racial segregation and discrimination against minorities and minority communities that predated that particular policy. See, before, this is called redlining, which in the United States, redlining very simply is the practice of denying services, whether directly or through selectively raising prices, for example. To avoid, we'll say you live in an upscale neighborhood, yet you have a up-and-coming, upwardly mobile minority that can afford the rent. Well, they turn around and take that and say, well, we're not going to allow you to rent it or lease a home or rent a home in our area because you're black or because you're a minority or for whatever reason. And that was wrong. Of course, that was wrong. But they've gone through this. They've actually flipped this now, and they're opening they're forcing landlords and property owners, and this extends to banking and insurance, supermarkets, I mean everything basically at this point. And they're saying, okay, we must not look at your background, we must not consider your history. In fact, we will grant you favored status so you can have what those people who've worked for what they have the same thing. This is part of socialism, and this is part of communism. And Austin, I'll kick it back to you, sir, or kick it to you.
Well, you know, real quick, Doug, before Austin jumps in here, you know, this is what they did in the housing mess that started back in the 90s. They started giving preferential treatment to minorities and to low-income families and immigrants and people who could not afford housing, and they were giving them houses, giving them loans that some of them never had any intentions on paying a single dime on, and they were flipping the houses a year later, and they were walking away with $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in cash at the time of closing. Again, this is all Cloward Piven. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what we saw with the housing locally, that we saw people that, you know, had 350 Beacon scores getting approved for $300,000 and $400,000 mortgages with very little proof of income or any type of restriction. And another thing I wanted to add in here as well is this seems very, very eerily similar to what is going on in Europe. Not exactly the same case, but think about it for a second. We see this mass influx of immigration from refugees into Germany and throughout Europe. They are putting them in people's houses. They're kicking people out of their own houses. They've stuffed them in there. Now they have police going around arresting people for negative Twitter comments against migrants, any type of Islam comment that's negative. They're addressing people. In the UK, they're arresting people all over the place. You can't say anything bad about Muslims. You can't do anything against them, but they can basically beat you, rob you, and come in your house and take everything you want, and there's nothing you can do about it. It seems to me that the United States is starting to follow that same line. If I'm a landlord, I have absolutely every right to find out the background of somebody that's living in one of my apartments, to know what type of person they are, what they're involved in. Have they been arrested 6, 7, 8, 9 times for, weapons charges? Have they been arrested for drug, you know, trafficking? Have they been arrested for pedophilia? All these things are things that need to be addressed. So for the the government to come in and say, you can't do this, again, it's showing me more that they're trying to take us down that road that Europe has slipped into now, where essentially the people that are at the end of society, that produce nothing, build nothing, but take everything, they're the ones that get priority over everything. So it's very strange to me that this is happening here right now.
What do you think, Doug?
It's 100% accurate. And I remember a year ago, as a matter of fact, a year ago this month, buying the studio and having to jump through so many hoops to buy the studio. I mean, we were put through the mill, extraordinarily, I believe, because of our corporate status and because of our business. And I mean, they wanted documentation in order for us to get a mortgage that was I've got a pretty high tolerance level for pain, but not for stupidity, and certainly not to be kicked around. Okay. However, during the process, I watched, and in real time, I watched mortgages close, even back a year ago now. And I know that they say, oh, well, the situation's changed. It's much more difficult. But a year ago, I watched people with lower credit scores than me, with less documentation than me, get favored treatment because of their station in life, and dare I say, even perhaps because of their race and even gender. How can I prove that? I really can't, but I certainly, when you go through the process, I think you've got to go through the process to really understand. And I don't want to say anything that, you know, untoward, but I got to tell you, man, I felt like I was a minority. I felt like I was being singled out. I felt that maybe Lois Lerner was, you know, looking through my back window, although I'm not a 501c3. Nonetheless, I just felt that the process was so oppressive toward me. So, to widen this out a bit, I think this is the agenda. And don't forget, one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto is to be rid of private property ownership. And they're going to do that not by necessarily taking your property away, but by making it so oppressive for those people who have the ability to purchase property, maybe not outright with cash or some similar commodity, but I believe this is their big intent is to abolish all private property rights and ownership, and I think this is part of the plan.
Well, I agree with you, because that's Cloward Piven. It's communism. And the crazy thing about this is, let's go back for one second. I want to step back to what's happening in Germany right now. What folks don't understand is this. Germany is a vassal state of the Rothschild banking empire, as is the United States, because of what happened with the Exchange Stability Fund and the bankruptcy of the United States in 1933 and the Exchange Stability Fund in 1934, and with the takeover of our Treasury and everything else they did in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act, which ended up culminating with them controlling the Treasury by 1934. I mean, this is what it is. Okay, this is exactly what's happened. And you got the Bank of England, you got the Vatican, you got the Rothschild, which, you know, organization, which is the bank, you know, which controls the Vatican fortune. All of these guys are tied together into this one world matrix. You know, there's a big group of them in there, and it's the Council of 300, it's the Bilderberger group, it's all of these guys in the mess of this mix, along with the Luciferians and the pedophiles and the Bohemian Groves and the Skull and Bones, all of this stuff. But the underlying factor here is this, that Israel is a vassal state of the Rothschild Empire. We know that because of the Balfour Declaration. I mean, that's blatantly obvious. But so is the United States, and so is Germany. When Germany was occupied after World War II, it was because Germany was completely and utterly destroyed. And then, of course, they allowed millions of Germans to actually starve to death after the war because they thought it was retribution for the war. And so the Germans were basically beaten down, beaten down, beaten down from a psychological standpoint for generations. And this has been going on now since 45, and now it's 2015. So what are we looking at, 50, 65, 70 years now? So we've got 70 years of this constant beatdown, with most of the people who were even alive during the war are either old now or dead. And so the craziest part of all of this is that Germany is not Germany anymore. The United States completely controls Germany. We have military bases in Germany, and of course the banking institutions and the black magicians and the CIA control us through their shadow government. We know all of this. But the problem is this, the people in the government in the United States. There are good people in our government who don't know any of this stuff because it's all part of the black ops money that goes out, and they don't have any idea what's going on. Then if they do have an idea, Doug, they won't talk about it. So, Doug, how do we wake up the people in our government who aren't pedophiles, who aren't weirdos, who aren't, you know, being, you know, blackmailed by the CIA or the FBI? How do we get these people to wake up and actually realize what's going on, and how do we get them to stop it, Doug?
I think the first question we have to ask ourselves, are there any in that, in those categories?
Yeah.
You know, I look at America as being a captured operation. We were captured from within. So are there any lawmakers, the 535 plus the eight now in the judiciary and the executive branch as well, are there any who are not captured or being blackmailed or who aren't perverts? Sorry, but that's just the way it is. And if there are, then we need to address them. But you know, is that even possible, Ted? I mean, is it, in Austin, I mean, is it possible to turn this ship around with the current makeup that we have? I mean, look at, regardless of what Trump is or who he is or what his motives are, I got a bad feeling, guys. Trump won't even see, he won't be on the Republican ticket. I don't believe for one minute they're going to put him on the Republican ticket. Priebus, head of the RNC, has basically said as much, and others have indicated as much. We're all being gamed. And whether or not Trump is in on it, I don't know, but certainly the American people are going to find out, I believe, this summer that the landscape, political landscape, is going to be looking a heck of a lot different than they anticipated for 2016. But to answer your question, I don't know, Brady. I don't know. If I had the answer to that, I think we'd all be sitting pretty, you know, in terms of turning this country around.
Well, I don't know. The only thing I know we can do is do what we do. And, you know, I urge all of you guys to, you know, to listen to the Hagmann Report every night instead of watching the mainstream Idiot Box TV. I urge you all to listen to the show that you're listening to right now, my show, and Dave Hodges' show on Sunday night. I don't know anything else we can do that. You know, Joyce Riley's got a good show. You know, Alex Jones has got a good show. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there that are doing a lot of good information out there. Now, I don't agree with everything that everybody says on the radio, except for pretty much Doug and Dave. I pretty much agree with them. But I mean, but the thing about it is, even if 90% or 95% of what they say you agree with, at least you need to be getting your friends to listen. Yesterday, Doug, I mentioned this on the show yesterday. I'm going to mention it to you. I took my daughter out to lunch yesterday. We kind of like had a daddy date day for lunch, my 13-year-old. And we had a lady walk in. We were sitting outside by the front of the restaurant. They had a table outside underneath like an archway, gazebo. And the lady walked in. She was pregnant. And I started talking to her about immunizations. And the look she gave me was like a calf at a new gate. You know, she had no idea what I was talking about. The fact that I would even question the mainstream narrative about the doctors being incorrect and that maybe she needed to do some research on immunizations. You can tell that nobody had ever even mentioned that to her. Now, some of the alternative commentators are saying that Robert De Niro did what he did on purpose in this release of this movie a couple of weeks ago, in which he made it a mainstream spectacle and mainstream TV picked it up, that he was not going to show the video. And they're saying now that he used reverse psychology to get the movie released and to give it much, much more publicity than it ever would have received had it been shown in this obscure film festival as his. What do you think, Doug?
Wow. That's interesting. I mean, I'm familiar with the I'm familiar with the situation with regard to his movie. I just never thought of it in that respect. What do I think of it? Brilliant, if that's the case. Rather than him acquiescing to the official narrative, is what you're saying?
What he did, according to this article that I read, which is actually quite in depth, it said that what happened is he actually did this on purpose and made this big deal about this thing. He had never apparently introduced a movie himself at his film festival and asked that it be shown. He was pretty much independent with this. And what he did, he made this huge to-do about this movie. And then he even came out and said he was going to personally introduce it because he wanted everybody to be aware of it, because his own son had been diagnosed with autism from the lady he's married with, who he's married to, a black lady, and this cover-up at the CDC specifically involved black children. And so it's saying in this article that he was smart enough to realize to get the maximum amount of information and advertisement and promotion for this, he had to make a big issue about it. Then he had to back off and basically let the media pick up the story to make this thing turn it into a national, international thing now. Now, if he actually did this and he did it for that reason, that's one smart dude. Now, otherwise, I'm not really what's going to happen about any of that stuff. But that was an interesting sideline. They said that he actually did this on purpose because he said before this all happened, he goes, "Grace and I have a child with autism, and we believe it is critical that all of the issues surrounding the cases of autism be openly discussed and examined. In the 15 years since the Tribeca Film Festival was founded, I have never asked for a film to be screened or gotten involved in the programming." And then to turn around, he actually, turned around and blew the film off, said, "No, we're not going to show it now, blah, blah, blah." And they're saying that it was done intentionally by him to get this massive amount of publicity about the film. What do you think about that, Austin? What do you think about that, Doug?
Wow. Austin, go ahead.
I mean, if he really did that, I mean, well, he pulled a psych op on all of us and did a really good job at it. I mean, that's pretty impressive if that was his true intentions about it, because what he did was pretty effective. I'm impressed if that's what he did. It's got a ton of publicity now.
Well, here's what they're saying. They're saying, what if De Niro knew all along the film would never be released because the sponsors of the film festival would have the final say? That's what they're saying, number one. The Sloan Foundation is one of the sponsors, and it's headed by globalist Paul Joskoff, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which we know the Sloan Foundation is massively, pro-abortion, pro-everything, pro-vaccines. The Rockefeller Foundation is also promoting his program. The J.D. Catherine MacArthur Foundation, which has supported projects that document films such as Ending AIDS, The Search for a Vaccine, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. These are the primary supporters of this Tribeca Film Festival, and he went right in their face with this movie. And, of course, the promoters said, "No, you're not going to show it," and that he was able to use that and almost catapult this thing into this cult status now by doing that, where otherwise it would have just been also ran at the film festival. What do you got? I mean, it makes sense, though, if you think of it, if he's that smart.
Well, the thing about it, too, though, that you've always told me that, is that if you listen close enough to what people tell you, they'll tell you their exact intention. He said 2 days before the film was supposed to get released, he said, "I think there needs to be a discussion on this. Everybody basically needs to see this. I'm going to introduce the movie myself." He couldn't have been any more clear on how he felt on the movie. So for him to turn around and say, "Now you can't see it," he definitely did a great job as far as reverse psychology, if that was his intent.
Yeah, what do you think, Doug?
Yeah, no, that would be brilliant. And he being a Hollywood insider in the business for half a century, I guess, perhaps. If that's what that's perfect, because I believe we've got to start thinking out of the box. Obviously, bringing information, just merely bringing information to people, whether it's in the form of a film, a documentary, a book, a DVD, whatever, YouTube video, it's not enough. And I ran into this too recently with a family member, trying to talk to them about the truth about 9/11 and the truth about really where we're at today as a nation and how we got here, and the disconnect, the "I don't want to hear it" attitude really surprised me, given the intellectual prowess of the person I was talking to. So I think so. What De Niro did is how we ought to adopt some sort of a similar strategy, perhaps, to the people that we want to bring into our side, into the fold of the intellectual discussion over these serious subjects like this. So that's brilliant. That's great, man. But yeah,
think about it. I want everybody to hear this. Oh, by the way, I'm being told you can't hear it now. We're going to censor it.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh. I mean, and then all of a sudden it makes major news, and the media bit it like a doggone fish on a hook. I mean, unbelievable. And then it blew it all up, made national news, and all of a sudden now everybody goes, well, what are they trying to hide? Why can't we see this movie? Here's one more article I want to cover because we're almost out of time. Police warned 2,000 people in Hanover, Germany, to stay away from windows and avoid waving at President Obama for fear of being shot when he passes by in his motorcade. Residents of this German city of Hanover have been told to keep away from the windows and avoid waving at Obama when he visits later this month in case they are shot by trigger-happy American Secret Service agents. Police have issued flyers to nearly 2,000 people living in the Congress Center due to be visited by Obama on April the 24th. He will meet there with Chancellor Angela Merkel for the Hanover Mess and an industrial technology thing. What do you think about us now warning people not to wave at our president? They're going to be shot in their windows. I mean, this guy's in a bullet. Well, Obama's in a bulletproof vest. I mean, you know, what's up with that, Doug? I mean, that seems a little bit bizarre to me.
You know, I go back to the Tavistock Institute and the predictive programming. I had said a number of years ago, and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought all along that Obama wouldn't survive his term. In order for his policies to really be promoted, I figured that he would be taken out, and that was I remember saying that. So, is it a case now where this is a incident of predictive programming, where maybe, just maybe, they want you to believe that some psycho is going to take him out, and some psycho might, or is it just a police state gone over the top? I don't know the answer to that, but I will say that. If I was there, I'd just be turning my back, or I wouldn't be there. Let me just say that he'd be parading into empty streets if I had my way. But I don't know, man. Austin, I'll defer to you again, sir.
Yeah, I would. I'm on your point. If they start warning stuff like that, I'd just stay away from that. It's almost like they're trying to use that as an excuse to set up another false flag, or, oh, we saw somebody doing this, so we had to shoot them. That's just, when the government starts talking about don't wave at people or else we're going to shoot you, it's best just to stay away from those hillbillies. I mean, they get involved in way too much stuff. I wouldn't go anywhere near that place after hearing that.
Hillbillies, I love it.
I'm sorry, Doug, I'm laughing with a hillbilly comment too. That was pretty good, Austin. But it's true. I mean, if they're that whacked out, they're going to start flinging their weapons everywhere and start shooting everybody. It's crazy. Here's another article out of RT. It says that wild radioactive Fukushima boars are breeding like rabbits, and they're ravaging the local countryside in Japan. It says that northern Japan is raising an alarm as this area surrounding Fukushima nuclear disaster zone has been overwhelmed by radioactive wild boars. And I think these things are pretty tough, man, whose population has exploded over the past 4 years because they're living in this exclusion zone. Doug, what's going on with these radioactive boars? I mean, what's going on with Fukushima? Why is the Pacific now, they're saying that it's pretty much dead? Multiple scientists are coming out and saying this. I mean, we got all kinds of scientists that are quoting huge marine die-off along the West Coast. We had diversity, we had organisms in the water. Now all of a sudden there's nothing left. These are top scientists saying this. Russell Hopcroft, University of Alaska Fairbanks, says we had an unusual number of mortality events in the system where some of the greatest whales are actually washing up and floating around dead. This is a huge signal we're taking. You're killing dozens of whales. Another one, Judy Kleischer, University of Washington, says unprecedented mass mortality event. 100,000 dead. Cassines, aklooks, which are a type of bird that mainly mean krill, have all died and have starved to death. William Schneiben from the Farallon Institute, senior scientist, says, what are we trying to understand? Death, whale, bird die-offs, ongoing and severe. There are a number of big things that have gone on, but at least to me, the whale and bird die-offs we have seen is really the big story. Melissa Carter from the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, what I want to show here, and again, one of the things that we are talking about here is how different the system has been throughout California, Baja, all the way to Alaska. The surface chlorophyll is gone. We have major increase in food. Everything is dying. Christine Lindquist from Farallon's Marine Sanctuary Association, we have a poster. Actually, our data is included in a couple of posters. We have another looking at our three unprecedented large mortality events since 2014. Doug, is it the El Nino? Is it the high pressures of the zone they parked over the Pacific to stop the rain from hitting California with HAARP? Is the HAARP killing the wildlife? Is this Fukushima radiation? What do you think, Doug?
Oh, man. Yes. No, maybe, perhaps, yes. Purple and 17. Now, you know what? We had author John Reagan on. He wrote a book about the financial state of the economy. I think he's on Tuesday or no Monday. I don't know. John Reagan, the financial state of the union. He was the author of that. However, he's an instructor with, or they call them instructors, on USA Prepares Radio. Now, having said all of that, we are. our interview progressed from numbers, the economy, to Fukushima. And I was surprised, and I had to look this up, because what he told me, I could not believe. He said, you know where, here in the United States, and I'll get back to the Pacific for a second, but for a second, let me just hit this. He said, you know where in the United States the highest concentration of Fukushima radiation exists? And I said, no. I mean, I'm thinking California, Washington, somewhere over in the West Coast. He said the east coast of Florida. Heads up, guys. Anyway, where the radiation was detected at the exponentially higher rates than the west coast, and that's because of the jet stream. Now, the numbers are pretty hard to find. The research is pretty hard to find, and then it's even harder to authenticate. However, there are people out there who have been saying this. But to answer your question, I think the bigger question, I think we're asking all the wrong questions about Fukushima. I think the question that we need to ask is, why, as soon as that happened, why didn't the United Nations, or what's up with the United Nations? What are they here for? They should have recognized the enormity and the potential for the disaster, got every country together, got all the greatest minds together, and said, okay, we got to fix this. We got to fix this now because it's, you know, pouring it into the Pacific. What do we do? But that never happened. So why not? What do they know that we don't know that we can kill off, basically allow the kill off of the Pacific, basically, and all waters connecting to the Pacific, as well as all of the forest, the trees, for example, in Washington. Some of the trees in Washington are being affected. Whatever grows on the trees that affects the trees, it won't even grow in the trees because of the radiation from Fukushima. So the bottom line is this. Why didn't they address this initially? Why has this been allowed to go on, and to what end? And right after this happened, I had a pretty high-level guy connected to the government say to me, you know, they're not really worried about the northern hemisphere. They want to populate the southern hemisphere for their wiles, meaning the globalists. So, you know, all over the board here, but I don't know, man.
Doug, also, we've got that major reactor leak in South Florida on the east coast of Florida that's been spewing huge amounts of radioactive water into the coastline water and estuaries down there. And I wonder if some of that radiation they're detecting off the east coast of Florida is coming from that leaking reactor down there. I don't know.
Predates that.
Okay. But Doug, I want to thank you. I want to Stained by Blood is the book. Go to Amazon. You can get it on Kindle. You can get a hard copy. Stained by Blood by Doug Hagman. Please get a copy of that immediately. I thank you guys for supporting Doug and supporting our show. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Sign up for our free newsletter. Thank you for coming to our website and buying your vitamins from us. We appreciate you guys. We love you, and we thank you. Austin, go ahead and close. And Doug, thank you so much for being on with me.
God bless you, brother.
Yeah, we appreciate it, guys. If you got any questions, go to healthmasters.com, email us, or give us a call. We'll be here for you guys 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, or email us. We appreciate it. You guys have a blessed night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.